the Five Star Zone with Rico Beard.
Welcome to another edition of the Five Star Zone. I'm your host, Rico Beard. Joining me today from the Big Ten Network, Senior Research Manager Harold Shelton. Kind enough to join us again. He's the man who brings all the numbers and the knowledge, and he gives the stats that makes us go like, man, for real? What? Because I shared your stats on Michigan last week and Alex Orji. I'm glad you gave those stats last week because I don't think we're going to see Orji again for a long time. What's going on, Harold?
Man, not much. Appreciate you having me on. And yeah, thought we had something with the Orji thing. And then after a couple drives, it's like, well, there goes that. So I'm glad we got that in when we did.
Okay, before we get into this week's matchups, I haven't talked to you about last week. I had the biggest question. If Jack Tuttle was your guy, why didn't he just start the game?
I was wondering that myself. I definitely felt like with that element of surprise, if they could have got a few more drives out of that, that might have been enough to win that game. Because once he came in, you could tell Washington didn't know what to do. They were able to move the ball. There were bigger holes for Donovan Edwards to run through. And they were just completely off balance. And then once they figured it out, they got a couple turnovers to end that game. And Jack Tuttle looked like, you know, the backup that he's been most of his career. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't start him, especially because it seemed like when he was healthy and they were doing the whole quarterback roulette before the season started, people were saying that if Tuttle was healthy, like he would have started game one. So if he was ready to go, then why not just start him?
Jed Fish came out, was like, well, yeah, we really didn't plan on them passing the ball. Like, I think the first play they gave the Michigan pass the ball, and then Washington was kind of like, yeah, we don't think you can be able to do that again. So
we
can live with that. That's
exactly
fine.
Exactly. So,
but yeah, that was the big head scratcher to me of like, why didn't you just start him? And with a couple more series before halftime and the adjustments, you may have been able to go out to Seattle and steal that game. All right. But let's go back out to the West Coast. We're heading out to Alston Stadium and Eugene, Oregon. It's number two versus number three. I think this is the battle that everybody in the nation, let alone the Big Ten, has been waiting to see. Harold, for some, it's going to be a rematch of the Big Ten championship game, but we'll get to that later. Ohio State traveling out west, which, look, the teams going from east to west have not fared well in the Big Ten so far this year. Really actually going from west to east either. I think the record is like 1-8 or 8-1, depending on how you want to look at it. Ohio State goes to Oregon. What are we looking at in this game? Ohio State brings the number one defense, the number 9 offense. Oregon with the number 10 defense and number 25 offense. What should we be looking at? Which side of the ball do you think is going to dominate the most? Let's start there.
So I want to see if the Ohio State offensive line can move that Oregon defensive line, which we really haven't seen since week two. Again, Ashton Jeancey had a day, but he's had a day against everybody. So I don't know if that's, you know, just a one-off or if that was a sign of things to come. Because if you look at Oregon since the second half of that Oregon State game, they've allowed one offensive touchdown, and that came against Michigan State in garbage time. So they've seemed to figure out some things on that side of the ball. They clearly spent well in the portal. They got a lot of dudes up front. And we know Ohio State, they love to run the ball. They're leaning on it more than they have in the past. You know, obviously with Judkins and Henderson and even Will Howard as a runner. So if they're able to stay in front of the chains, it's 2nd and 6, it's 3rd and 2 or 3, and Oregon doesn't know what to do on defense, I think Ohio State's in good shape. But if Will Howard has to win the game, if he has to repeatedly throw it 35 times, 40 times, I think that's a recipe for disaster. We've seen him put the ball in harm's way a couple times. You know, we saw the terrible throw against Michigan State where Jordan Turner picked it off. He had another bad one last week against Iowa. So he has a tendency to throw the ball to the other team. And if they make Will Howard beat him with his arm, we haven't seen it yet, so I want to see if that's possible.
Yeah, because when I look at this game, it's funny you brought up Will Howard. In the games this close, I look at who has the best playmakers. Ohio State has a lot of guys, but I look at the quarterback. I trust Dillon Gabriel, especially at home, more than I do Will Howard. I just don't think that Howard has been tested at all this year. Ohio State has put up a bunch of empty calorie stats, is what I like to call them. I know you're the stats guy. I'm not trying to disrespect you, but some of these stats are just empty calories because you're going up against bad teams and you're padding your stats. It's why I'm still holding my breath against Indiana football. I don't know what Indiana football is yet because you haven't really played anybody, but you've beaten the teams you're supposed to beat. Ohio State the same way. I don't know if Will Howard is just a traffic cop out there just making sure everybody gets fed, or if need be, if you're down six with the game on the line, could he drive down the field with 57 seconds and one timeout to go and score the winning touchdown? I don't think so. Dillon Gabriel, on the other hand, I have full confidence. He could do that, drive down and get that score. I look at it as, yeah, I favor Oregon in this right now because I like the quarterback situation. It looked as if last week against Michigan State, they got their running game going. And, yeah, that defense, my goodness. I thought poor Aiden Childs was about to get Devin Gardner there for a second. And you know, when the State just beat up on Gardner that game, that's what I thought was going to happen. I look at what's happening in Oregon with the home field and everything. I know Ohio State's favorite. I don't get that. I don't understand that. But, man, look, I don't have as many numbers as you, Harold, but everything I'm seeing and looking at tells me that this is going to be an Oregon game.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick, I would lean Oregon right now, too. And I think part of it is the travel, like you talked about. Teams that have traveled across multiple time zones, a Big Ten player, 1-8. And, you know, the one win was Indiana winning at UCLA. They've lost eight straight since. And we got three more this week with, obviously, Ohio State, Oregon, Washington going to Iowa, and then Penn State going to USC. So I do think the travel is going to play a part of it. Oregon likes to go up tempo. You know, we saw it against Michigan State. They just seem to kind of hit them with body blow, body blow, body blow. And then out the gate goes Jordan James for another big run. You know, it's Treshawn Holden getting a big play. And I just think they have a way of wearing on you. And we haven't seen Ohio State play an up-tempo offense like that. And normally we see these Pac-12 teams and, you know, they have, you know, all these skilled players, but they don't have the dudes up front. And it seems like Oregon's got the dudes up front. Like Dan Lanning's trying to build an SEC-style system like he had at Georgia with really good line play on both sides.
Needless to say, whoever wins this game, I think, is probably going to be the favorite to win the Big Ten. I just wonder if Ohio State and, you know, they can go out there. Ryan Day seems to do well against any team outside of Michigan. I guess who needs this game more, Lanning coming into the Big Ten or Ryan Day to just go back and say, no, we are still the best team in the Big Ten?
I actually think Ohio State probably needs it more. I think the Oregon win over Boise is going to be huge for resume purposes, and Ohio State doesn't have that. If Boise winds up going like 11-1 or something like that, and they're trying to, you know, get that top 8 seed where even if they don't win the Big Ten, they can still get a home game, I think that win's going to have a ton of shelf life at the end of the year. And I don't think there's enough talented teams that can give Oregon another loss outside of Ohio State. And Ohio State, I think for them, it's, is Ryan Day going to lose another big game? You know, like, will the fan, if they lose that game, all the money that was spent on the offseason, is the best team money can buy, and, you know, $20 million and Caleb Downs and, you know, all of these guys coming in. If the first big test winds up being a dud, I just wonder, like, what the fan base starts to think. Is the heat turned up, even if it's premature? I just kind of wonder what that's like. And if Oregon loses, it's like, oh, well, you know, that was a big game, but, you know, we got a chance to get them later in the year, and the pressure isn't nearly as intense as it is at Columbus.
Yeah, I look at it, man. Some reason that the flight across the Mississippi is undefeated. Well, I mean, Indiana beat UCLA, but I don't think that's really asking for much. Figuring, heck, we should have known UCLA was going to fall flat on their face as soon as their head coach, Sean Foster, got up at Big Ten Media Day and just spaced out. Like,
yeah, that was uncomfortable.
Yeah, we're in LA. Yeah, we're just like USC. What?
Yikes.
Yeah. All right. Any good stats for this before we move on to the next big game?
Well, just these kind of matchups are rare, you know, just the fact that this is only the fifth, you know, AP top three matchup in the Big Ten this century. Only the 10th one that we've ever had. It's usually Ohio State, Michigan. Each of the last four have been. So the fact that it's Ohio State and somebody else, I think, is a nice change. And the fact that you even have Penn State hovering, like if they win on Saturday, then they'll probably be in the top three because you figure one of those two teams ahead of them has to lose since they're playing each other. So just the fact that you got three Big Ten teams in the top four and you got some new blood in there makes it fun.
Well, you spoke of Penn State. Penn State traveling across that Mississippi River, going out west to take on USC. Harold's USC team that a few weeks ago I really thought was one of the top teams. I thought this was a USC team that could actually make the college football playoffs. Right now, I don't even know if they're going to be a USC that can be in the top, you know, upper eight of the Big Ten, because they go on the road, they lose to Minnesota, and they lost to Michigan. This looks like a totally different team than what they started off earlier in the year, going up against a Penn State team. Let's face it, James Franklin is the king of beating the mediocre, but when you put him up against good teams, not so much. Something's got to give in this game. What are we looking at?
So it was funny when I was preparing for I sent out a thing on Sunday where I try to talk about things that could happen in the week. And I was preparing like, oh, this is going to be a top 10 matchup. And James Franklin hasn't done well in those. And then USC lost and fell out of the poll. And everything winds up changing. And it's just funny because, as we talked about with Franklin, like he does struggle in those big games. But all of a sudden, USC doesn't have a number next to him. And it's like, huh. Now, all of the good James Franklin notes could come out. Like, they've won 25 straight against unranked teams. They've won 11 in a row on the road against unranked teams. And so, for whatever reason, he seems to do really well in these type of games. And, you know, maybe since USC isn't as good as we thought, maybe this is a situation where Penn State goes out there, exerts their will, and wins this game. I've been really disappointed in the USC defensive front. You know, we talked about Oregon and how, you know, they're built for a Big Ten style with, you know, offensive line, defensive line. That is not the case with USC at all. You know, we saw, you know, Michigan run all over them. We saw, you know, Wisconsin have success early, and Minnesota ran for close to 200 yards last week, and they were held in check against Michigan and Iowa. So they're playing teams that are pushing them around a little bit, and we know Penn State likes to do that as well. You know, we saw it in the Illinois game where they pretty much just wore Illinois down and just continued with body blows, body blows, body blows, and eventually the dam broke. And I wonder if it's going to be the same here. You know, Nicholas Singleton didn't play last week, and maybe that was part of why they were so flat against UCLA. But that combo with him and Katron Allen, I think that might be too much for SC.
What happened to the USC defense? Because it looked like they figured it out. I mean, watching the first game of the year, and it's just like, okay, USC's defense is flying around and they're tackling. Man, it's almost like Khalil Mullings just broke them, and they never recovered since that Michigan, since the 63-yard run at the end of that Michigan game.
Yeah, so I think USC's defense was so bad the previous 2 years that any improvement made it seem like it was like, oh, they're back, they're fixed. But I think because the bar was so low,
true,
that it just kind of made it seem like they had gone over the top in terms of how much they've improved.
Right. And it's like, you know, the deadbeat dad. I say it's like the deadbeat dad. Well, you know what? He paid the bills this month. All right. Yeah. Right.
Like, congrats for doing your job. Like, you right. know, we don't want it to be that, but that's what it seems like it is. I mean, they're certainly better than they have been, but I just don't think that they're good yet. I think they have been like in positions to make plays, but at the same time, they haven't made them as consistently as we saw with the Mullins run. You know, the fact that you allowed Minnesota to score 14 straight in the fourth quarter to beat you when you got a lead, like those are games you should have won. And if you did win those games, now you're talking about, you know, top five matchup, Penn State, USC, and, you know, winner it is, you know, pole position for the playoff and all that kind of stuff. But because they couldn't tackle, now you're looking at a potential what, 4-3 USC if they lose, and then the Heat's back up on Lincoln Riley again, and you know, then you get all of that talk that happens.
You think James Franklin and Penn State can keep this thing going? Because you're right, they win this game just by pure numbers, they're going to move into the top three. Is this, you know, something that's sustainable throughout the year, or is this a little bit of fool's gold?
I think it's a little column A, column B, mostly because of the schedule. I think, obviously, they still have the game against Ohio State, and, you know, we've seen them struggle a lot against them. But other than that, that's the only ranked team left. You know, they've got Wisconsin, Washington, Purdue, Minnesota, Maryland. So those are the games that they normally win to begin with. And so even if they do lose to Ohio State, if they win this week, 10-2 or 11-1, Penn State's going to make the playoff. It's just, you know, where are they going to be at that point? Like, they, if it's 11-1 with the loss to Ohio State, then they're hosting somebody in December. If they happen to, you know, lose two games, they're in, but they're on the road somewhere. So I think the way that they're built certainly allows them to make the playoff. I still don't know if it's enough for them to beat Ohio State. They just seem to not have the horses when it really matters to make plays late in that game. But I think for right now, they're certainly built to be in that 12 team.
All right. It's something I do want to talk about, and I didn't put it on the sheet because I was just actually reading it before we hooked up for this. Have you been looking at this new NCAA, National Letter of Intent, and now that's going away? Are you up on this?
So, yeah, I saw it briefly, and I always thought it was weird that we relied so much on, like, like the National Letter of Intent and, like, the sheet being faxed and all this kind of stuff. Because, like, just talking to, you know, analysts who were, in high school not that long ago, right, they would always say, like, oh, we would just sign some sheet of paper and you actually would do the National Letter of Intent, like, off somewhere else. But, you know, usually when you have the whole hat thing in front of you and you're at the table and your family's sharing, like, you're just making like you're signing the sheet of paper anyway. Like, it's not even a big thing. So
yeah, it's like when people get married. It's like when people get married. You already married. You signed the license with the priest in the back room, and now we go through the exam of will you and will you? Because I look at this and with the NLIs now, I guess going away, I'm thinking to myself. So does this mean that if Harold Sheldon goes on a visit and he just is blown away, I can just go ahead and commit right here and there and they get me financial aid and I become a student? Or do you still have to wait? Like, how is this going to work? Because that's how I interpret it as, you know, you can just go ahead and lock this person up. You blew it away. They want to go commit to you. Let's just, instead of waiting 5 months, let's just make it happen now.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, too. Because, you know, with so much has been made about signing day and the multiple signing days, does all of that go away with this? You know, they've already talked about pushing signing day up to the first week in December as opposed to the third week. So is there a signing day at all? Like, is it just going to be a sham? Like, I definitely need to read more and figure out more about it, because, like, it doesn't make sense to make all of these rule changes to, you know, talk about signing day and moving them up or only having one and then come out with this. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because the way I see it, it looks as if it sounds like to me, if a kid wants to commit, they just commit. And if they end up wanting to decommit, how is it any different than what we have? Now, I did think I saw something that if you commit, maybe you got to, you know, you're there for a year and then you could hit the portal. So that they're just not committing to five different schools all at once. Like I said, I still got to take a deeper dive into it. I just thought it was interesting, man. I do want to talk about this. We touched upon this actually before we started rolling. Ryan Walters at Purdue. Is he going to make it to the end of the year? I thought that this could work there with that young man. And it looks like the team just kind of quit on him.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, I thought that, you know, after the Nebraska game, because they held them scoreless in that first half. They had a 3-0 lead, and then it, you know, completely got away from them. And then again in the first half, they're hanging around a little bit with Wisconsin. And you could tell once things started going wrong, they let go of the rope. And it should be no reason you lose by 46 to this Wisconsin team. None. You know, the fact that you gave up 52 points to do it, you know, Wisconsin's really struggled on offense all year. It definitely looked like, you know, they were, you know, lacking some effort in some places. And it's not going to get any easier. I mean, you know, they got, you know, Illinois and Oregon and then Ohio State and Penn State all in a 5-game stretch. And you got ranked Indiana at the end. So, I mean, even if they do, you know, let them finish, which I hope they do, like I'm never a fan of firing a dude midway through the second season. But that schedule isn't doing them any favors. And if they were losing games by, you know, 17 and 18 and 46 to the likes of Wisconsin and Oregon State, Nebraska, like you kind of wonder, can they turn this around at all when they're playing even tougher teams?
Yeah, because then if that's the case, if you're the next coach, I mean, your job – I guess you got to do it quicker because the team will leave, hit the portal, you'll lose all your recruits, and you'll have to end up starting from nothing, unless you do what Indiana did and bring in Cignetti, and he, wow. I don't know if I've seen a coach make an instant impact like this. Now, I know they're not playing great talent, but Harold, they are just annihilating anybody that gets in front of them. They're trying to run up the score. There is no such thing as take a knee. Go easy on them. They're trying to score 60 in every game. Heck, they scored 77 in one game where they scored off 50 points and a half.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. Like, I know people are like, oh, it's Indiana and they haven't played anybody, but they are blowing teams out. Like, they just look dominant. And I think there's something to be said to that, especially when you're a team that isn't used to doing that. Because I feel like a lot of times you get these schools that have these magical runs and, you know, then they start overlooking teams, thinking that they're better than what they are. And then here comes the inevitable slip up. And that hasn't happened yet. And I think Cignetti's done a great job with that. I think that is him being a winner everywhere he's been, you know, a singular focus of like, hey, yeah, we're winning, but we're not doing what we need to be doing. Like nothing seems to satisfy him. Like they'll be up 20 at halftime and he's talking about what went wrong and what this mistake was and we aren't playing our best ball. But then after the games, he's talking about, well, yeah, you know, we expect to win, you know, and these guys should expect to win. And, you know, I just think that's his winning culture from where he's had, you know, at Elon, James Madison and all of that. And I think it certainly helps when you can bring a bunch of dudes that you won with you. You bring your whole staff. You could bring 11, 12 guys with you from James Madison. And it's like, look, I'm used to this culture. This is what we're going to do here. So then you can get the other guys on board. And it's like, oh, this is working. This is winning. I have no choice but to be on board with it. I think he's doing a really good job. And I'll be curious to see going forward. You know, so many times people try to find these coaches that are like the hot Mac offensive coordinator or like some, you know, some visor young guy that, you know, has all of these plans instead of just, you know what? I know he's older, but he's a proven winner. Like maybe I just need to go get a dude that I know can win. And maybe like that's a shift we might see going forward. We saw it with Lance Leipold at Kansas and it seems to be working there too. So
you think he sticks around?
Well, I think money-wise, he's not bad. I'd be curious to see who would be after him. Indiana certainly gave him a solid contract. And, you know, with it being SEC and Big Ten seeming to have all the money right now, like if you're going to leave, it certainly needs to be worth it. But at the same time, you want to strike when the iron is hot. And we've seen coaches wait too long and, you know, not take advantage of an opportunity. But if he's happy there and his family's happy there and all that, like he could be a legend.
Speaking of which, we're going to end it how we kind of started it. Should Sharon Moore be worried? Because this isn't the start that Wolverine fans wanted to see. You still haven't played Oregon. You still haven't played Ohio State. You're looking at a game next week on the road at Illinois that I got to think that Michigan won't be favored in. You still have to play Indiana. And, oh, by the way, you still got a game against Michigan State. Is it safe to say he, no matter what happens, he'll survive this year and he'll get year two?
He should. I mean, I certainly think he should. I think trying to, you know, get rid of a dude after a year seems to be, you know, very impatient. Again, I know Michigan fan base has been used to winning, you know, at a high level these last few years, you know, with, you know, the three straight Big Ten titles and a national title and all of that. But, you know, I think you have to look around and say, like, okay, so we lost our head coach, our strength coach, we lost our coordinators, we lost, you know, 13 dudes to the draft, we lost dudes to the portal, we didn't have a quarterback. And maybe some of that you can blame on him, kind of like, well, how did it get to this point? How did we not have a quarterback ready to go? Maybe there's better coordinators that could have worked, that were out there, that could have, those choices could have been made. But at the same time, if it's his first year doing it, I think you got to allow him to work through the process. Now, if it still looks like this in year two, year three, and you want to have that discussion, I think that's fair. But after a year, I don't think that's fair to him.
All right. Anything you want to hit us with before we wrap this up?
No, it's going to be a very interesting week. Again, you know, first time Big Ten's ever had three teams in the top four. It's probably going to, you know, stay with at least two in the top three, assuming Penn State, you know, wins that game at SC. And, you know, now we're starting to get into playoff talk. You know, we're starting to wonder if a team like Indiana, once they get back going next week, if they kind of get into that playoff discussion. It's going to be fascinating now that we're starting to get into the meat of conference play.
All right, he's Hale Sheldon from the Big Ten Network, Senior Research Manager. I'm Rico Beard, host of the Five Star Zone. Going to bring Harold back next week as we break down get ready to preview week 8. I mean, 2/3 away of the season is now gone. It seems like it took forever to get here, and now it's leaving us, Harold. Harold will be back with us next week. Thanks for watching, liking, and subscribing to Five Star Zone. See you next week, everybody.